Okay.
Okay.
So I guess my, you know, I'm a little bit focused with my questions.
That's fine.
But I sort of just want to know what you have to say or have to remember.
Okay.
So let me start with some really basic things like, okay, let me do this. You were a student.
I was a student.
Okay.
I was a student when he at the time that he retired. His last year was my junior year.
Okay.
As I recall.
Okay. And did you ever meet him personally or have any personal interactions with him? Okay, no. On that one. I heard at that time it was absolutely mandatory to go to chapel.
Yeah, but what I did was I vacuumed like Harstead Hall.
Uh-huh.
Because I had labs and science classes, I just said that's when I had to do it. So after my freshman year, I missed a bunch of chapels.
Really?
But that was, I didn't really have to do it that way, but that's what I did.
Yeah, it just seemed convenient to
find
your own chapels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the chapel services that you did go to, can you tell me anything about them? How you remember them
I can remember every week that I ever went, one day of the week. I don't remember if you did it. I don't remember if he did it every day or what, but there was one day in the week, I think it was a Friday, he would say, it's been a wonderful week. I don't know if anybody else has too, if you've heard that from anybody else, but
I read Phil Nordquist's little section in his book about it, and he said that
it's been a great week or something like that, and I remember that, but that's the only thing I remember. I mean, you know, remember what he looked like, and I remember he would do whatever he did. But.
Did he seem... How did he come off to you, like, or what was the
genuine
public opinion?
He seemed genuine in saying it, you know, it wasn't, I mean, he seemed that way.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like, oh, okay. But on the other hand, on reflection, you know, when I thought about it later, I wasn't so sure if I wasn't just being prison. That was probably a freshman.
When you thought about it later, like now thinking back, or
no,
later
no,
on
even
while
later,
you were still
later
in school?
No, later on, by my sophomore year or junior year or something like that. Yeah. But, I mean, I didn't give it.
Right, that was the next question.
Yeah.
So you and your friends wouldn't sit around and talk about East Fold and what?
No, not really. I don't recall that at all. Uh-huh.
So you don't remember feeling you weren't directly affected by any of his rules, like the...
Well...
Or remember...
I remember students that would miss so many, and then they'd have to go see the Dean of Men or do something like that. And they'd get on... There was a special list that they'd go on. But if they missed, I just remember that it was, I mean, chapel was not voluntary. It was mandatory, and it was enforced, and students could get into trouble for not attending if they didn't have a legitimate student.
Yeah.
And I thought that was sort of funny, I guess. At first, when I came, I thought, well, that's okay, but after a while, I thought it was like, sort of strange.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's because, of, you know, at that period of time, people undergo a lot of change. But I didn't give it a lot of thought. I don't remember sitting around and talking about it. I don't remember how seriously he really took this role. You know, he was president, obviously.
Right.
He was, you know, that sort of thing.
I
can't say that he had any big impact on my life.
Okay.
Yeah. Not if any.
Okay. In Phil's book, he writes that in chapels, people would do it at they'd write notes, they'd do their nails,
they'd hire
whatever.
Somebody to sit in their seat because it was like you were assigned a seat number, as I recall.
They really?
They would have people sometimes sit in their seats, too.
Okay.
Like if they were on that list, I think that's what, you know, like something went wrong, they'd try to make sure.
Yeah.
They'd negotiate for somebody who hadn't missed one yet to sit in the seat or something.
So you didn't hear by word of mouth what sort of punishments there were?
I think there was a threat of getting thrown out of school.
Really?
I think that was the threat, yeah.
It's hard to do this without, you know, having my own preconceived idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been interesting. Okay.
Now that's a long time, so my memory is good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was thinking about this. I can barely remember back to, you know, whenever. I don't know.
High school.
Okay, now that's about... Oh, okay. Do you remember having any feelings about when, because you were a junior, you said when he, about the time of his resignation.
Yeah, I think that was his last year.
I read that there was a lot of mixed feelings about his resignation because it all started with this huge loan.
Yeah, it was a loan that went for the development out on the coast,
Ocean Shores.
And apparently this was unbeknownst to the Board of Regents or something. I don't remember the details.
Okay.
But apparently he had done something with money that he shouldn't have done.
$250,000.
Yeah, which at that time would have been a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I thought, oh, that's kind of weird. What else was there? I just remember that. And I remember that when I got to college, too, I became radicalized politically.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very conservative Republican, yeah. So I just didn't have much, trust like that. I sort of had that feeling. But I do remember this scandal somehow. But I was largely apolitical with respect to university politics. I think, felt it was sort of irrelevant to me. I really didn't feel that way. I didn't feel any way personally disappointed or threatened by what he had currently done.
Okay.
It bothered me.
Do you remember? Okay, then I read when he resigned, sort of by force, because they felt he had too much control over everything,
of
the business.
Yeah, hiring. Apparently, I found this out subsequently when I started teaching. Apparently, he had his fingers in hiring.
Just did everything, and then when they told him that he, because after this they did a study, like a faculty self-study was what it was called, and they wanted him to separate the things, and he said that's where he would want to resign, and so he resigned. And then I heard that there was a big rebellion of people that were adamantly did not agree with his resignation and thought that he should stay on. Do you remember any of that?
I don't.
It just didn't matter to you, really.
It didn't really.
Okay.
And I mean, usually I'm pretty apolitical. But just if you want to phrase, I stole this from somebody else, but when he did get into trouble, because he was conservative, and I sort of, I thought he was way too religious for me. I felt it, what's called a persona of Schadenfreude, and I still shiver with pleasure at his suffering.
Okay. Yeah.
But he, I can believe that there was some real infighting because I had some teachers during that period of time who were pretty fundamental.
Can you remember anymore? Like, would they bring it up in class?
They wouldn't bring up Eastville, but I mean, I'm sure that they were the ones that I could be pretty accurate in guessing who supported him and who didn't.
Yeah.
Really. people in the religion department were probably largely on his side, I would guess. Oh, I don't know. I mean, some of the older people.
Yeah. Now the religion department seems to be much more liberal, huh?
I think so. I think that, that's a legitimate academic class that's really good.
Right.
I think a lot of what I got when I was there. I mean, one of the teachers I had during that period of time was basically my own best. All of history is just unfolding at that time. Produced white Americans, really.
Yeah.
Male Americans.
Yeah.
It's basically what, it really was sort of like that. It was a course called, both American history and church history. I guess, and, I was beginning to develop my own ideas.
Right, your own opinions
and
beliefs.
Yeah.
What interests me is, since we're learning all these things about Eastfold and they seem so shocking, et cetera, et cetera. But do you think, from your experience just in life, that it was anything really out of the ordinary for that time period?
Not for that
time
period, no. It was, I don't think it was anything out of the ordinary. It was grossly unfair to women, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. I mean, they had one set of rules applied to women, another to men, this sort of thing. But at the time, we didn't think it was fair, but we just thought that's the way it is.
Right.
I didn't see it as something unique to PLU. But it was about that time that things started to change, too, across the country.
So do you think PLU, I'm definitely not trying to put words in your mouth.
Okay.
Well, would you say that you think maybe PLU progressed a little bit slower?
That,
Because of East Boulder, do you really not have that perception?
I would say, I would think that changed slowly, yeah. I don't know, I won't use the word progress, although I might call it progress, but it, I mean, I think, you know, just the fact that women should have the same opportunities and responsibilities and rules and regulations as men should. I mean, I really think that's the way it should be. And I suspect it was a little slower. There was no dancing.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, there was no dancing at the time, but I mean, it didn't bother me.
You didn't care.
Well, I liked to dance in high school, but I was doing other things.
Right.
So it really didn't bother me. And of course, the men could go out and do whatever they wanted anyway and come back in like their hours later in the dorm. And people would ignore it. You know, I mean, there was still a lot of drinking going on in the dorms. There was however, I only remember drugs once in my entire undergraduate school, period. And that was probably a good one compared to some places because a lot of people really got burned during the 60s.
Yeah.
I suspect that was probably a good thing, but I think it then did catch up. But I only remember one incident where I was told that this one kid from California was on drugs, and I didn't buy them. I'd heard of drugs.
Yeah.
Until I started graduate school. Even then, it wasn't that bad, but I think that was probably, you know, so you can't say progress, you say change. There are certain things I value that I think it wasn't as progressive as other places, but there were some advantages to it, too.
If you had, just from what you know, in your experience, if you had to say what you think his greatest contribution to PLU was, if any, in general, what would you say?
Well, I mean, to the institution itself, he kept it intact through some pretty tough times, from what I understand. And not while I was a student, but there, because it was, you know, that was the big boom. But I know when I came back to teacher, meeting faculty who had been here through those times, the D school, that he kept the place intact. Sometimes they didn't get paid. And that sort of thing, but he managed to keep the place, you know, for the institution itself, I think he was very crucial to it getting through some very tough times.
Do you get the feeling that before his resignation came about, that the faculty pretty much supported him?
Not all. I know some didn't.
Okay.
I had enough, I think I could say that my advisor at the time had great difficulties with him. You know, just from, this is I figured out subsequent to when I was there. No, I don't think, I would say no. I don't know what the proportion was, but I'm certain that there were faculty who were glad to see him go.
He was here for a while.
Yeah, he was here for several decades.
Yeah.
Well, 25 years, over 20 years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think there were some that were glad to see him go. I don't know by discipline, but I would expect that. My suspicion would be that maybe probably you want science as well, but I don't know.
Yeah. And so now, not that you sit around with all your colleagues now and talk about the East Home days, but the impression you get, what sort of feeling are you left with?
Well, see, I don't do that because I left, but when I came back, they were... I was here the first year for MORDFET. When I came back to teach, MORDFET had already retired.
Okay.
So then there were the MORDFET years, and when I came back, they were having all the problems with Wigman. I came right in, that's when I came back to campus, it's right when there was a huge controversy over the present Wigman. So I have never really, I haven't thought about Southeast Bowl, except, you know, sometimes somebody says something, it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
See, that's what I mean, where the problems, you know, was the controversy with Seth Eastfold unique to the controversy with the, I don't remember.
Well, see, yeah, Wigman. Well, I came back and I thought, geez, this faculty's just, we've being, you know, whatever. We're just being faculty. You know, it's a bunch of prima donnas often as faculty can be. But, I don't know, you know, I think that, I think if Eastfold had stayed on much longer, I'm not sure the university would. I think, my personal opinion is that MORDFET was very good. That's after the fact. Not thinking this at the time when MORDFET was coming in to replace him. But in a way, I think, I thought that at the time. But that was only because I saw MORDFET out with fly fishing on Clover Creek, the first time I ever saw him, and I thought that was cool. But I think subsequent coming back, I think MORDFET, I mean, just the respect with which people talk about it and that sort of thing, I think MORDFET, I think it'd be useful to continue for that period of time. I don't know.
It seemed like he didn't have a very personal relationship with anyone. Eastfold.
Eastfold, yeah.
That it was sort of bureaucratic.
Well, I think Orthet was first and foremost a scholar rather than a doctrinaire, a dogmatic, fundamentalist Christian. I don't know what his political views were, but I think he was first and foremost a scholar.
So, do you remember when the chapel services stopped being mandatory under
Orthet?
That was
after I left, yeah. I think they were still mandatory when I was here that first year. I mean, that first year he was here, I think so, but like I say, that's when I arranged my work.
I don't really remember.
All I remember is that they were required initially. I don't recall if they were, but I'm not suspecting they were.
Okay.
But there were all sorts of funny rules that they had for women versus men. I remember some of the female students telling me that their dorm mother told them that if they had to ride to a football game over at UPS in a crowded car, they sat on a boy's lap, make sure they put a newspaper on the lap. And don't wear red. I mean, these sorts of things.
Don't wear red, huh? Just
yeah. But that's not Eastfold.
Sort of color.
Yeah. Well,
oh, right. But that was part of it.
Sure.
That was the context.
I mean, there were times where there were panty raids. You know, this sort of thing going on. It's relatively. All of a sudden, the guys in the dorms, you know, all this noise, and they'd just rush out of the dorm. No, it's just hilarious. When you think about it.
Yeah.
Also, at that period of time, you know, of course, women weren't supposed to smoke, but men could. Harstead Hall, which was a men's dorm, there were 500 cigarettes burning an hour in that dormitory. Yeah, continuously.
Wow.
I mean, that was back when everybody was still smoked as a consequence. I've never really given it up, but I'm honest to God, that was one of the biggest things. It's much better now. I used to clean the lounges. Uh-huh. They would just be solid cigarettes on the floor, just put them out on the floor, and just full of smoke.
Wow. It was allowed to smoke on campus.
Oh yeah, all smoke. It was for men.
For men.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. Do you think, as a smoker, during this day and age, do you see more women smoking now than men?
I think the proportions certainly changed. I think there's a higher proportion of them. I don't think the absolute number is increased, but I can't say. All my impression is, of the people I see smoking, there's a much higher proportion of women now than there was at that time. Of course, at that time, you didn't see the women smoking so much. You know, they might off campus or whatever. But, you know, well, the other thing is, too, women were running around these high heels. You know, really high heels.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference. But no, men smoked, a lot of men smoked. There was smoking, you know, in the hallways. What you wouldn't go outside to smoke. You'd leave the classroom and just go stand out in the hall and smoke. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's really changed
crazy.
For the better.
Yeah, it has.
So the culture's changed a lot. But that's about all I can tell you about Eastfold. I mean, that's not really the end.
No, oh, right. Yeah. But I just like to talk about things in general. Well, wonderful that it really was
good
enough to lead me in a direction and get an opinion.
Okay, good.
So I very much appreciate your time.
I was at a social hour with Audrey, and I got into a conversation with Toppy Kylo. She's a Ramstead, and Ramstead was the one and only chemistry teacher and he helped coach teams and was here during that era. And Toppy made the comment that my dad finally got a full paycheck when Eastfold came, because, you know, there were a number of years when they just weren't being paid.
Yeah.
In fact, it wasn't being paid. So Toppy Kylo, she lived right across the street from here. Would have been a great person to interview. And she lives here in Parkland, or out by the Brookdale Golf Course. So if you need anyone else to interview, she probably
would
have unique information.
You said that Audrey was there?
Yeah.
I bet Audrey knows of this, of Toppy.
Yeah.
Because she's assigned a bunch of other people in the vicinity to other students in the class.
Okay.
So, but I'll bring up the name, just...
Kylo, K-Y-L-L-O.
Okay. Okay. That's cool. Well, thank you.
And Ramstead was first class. I was a chemistry major, and so my freshman year, I remember him. He was a great man.
Okay.
But, Eastfold.
Okay. Not extremely structured, just very basic questions, mostly, I just, you know, memories, recollections.
Okay.
In what capacity did you know him? You were a student here?
I was a student beginning in the fall of 1955, and that was toward the end of his administration.
Okay, right when it started getting spicy.
Yeah, it got fairly spicy. His autocratic rule started to rile some of the faculty members, and his style of leadership, which was really strong arm, I think started to work against him with the faculty as the institution started to grow and mature and stabilize a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The 50s were pretty good years for enrollment, and we built national reputations in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball.
Okay, yeah,
and,
I read that.
And he supported athletics.
You were the captain, weren't you?
Well, I was a captain one of the years, I can't remember, and I was inspirational award winner of my senior year.
Okay, because Jim, or Phil mentions you in his book.
Yeah.
I didn't
read
that guy.
Anyway, so 55 mm-hmm. through 60, actually, only 4.5 years, and we only had one graduation ceremony in those years, so if you didn't finish everything in the spring, you have to wait a whole year if you wanted to go through
really?
The ceremony. So my diploma says 1960, but I went through December of 1949.
Okay.
So, anyway, then I came back to work at PLU in 1963, right after he had resigned. I think he left in 62, and the new president, Bob Mortfett, he's the one that hired me to come back to work at PLU. So I've been here 34 years.
Okay.
In various capacities.
So what? Okay, well, we'll get there. Did you ever have any personal interactions with these folks? Conversations?
I can't remember the details of any conversations. I know that he came to my wedding.
Oh,
and,
really?
March 21st, 1959. And his present to me was his book, Around the World in 180 Days. I think that was what it was.
Yeah.
I still have that at home, and he did sign it. But, I felt honored by the fact that he would take time to come to run. We were married here in Tacoma at Bethlehem Lutheran Church, and he was there. I was not much of a troublemaker, so I didn't get into his office very often. I mean, he didn't call you in to commend you for anything. Usually it was some kind of disciplinary problem. And I lived off campus with my parents, and so wasn't involved in some of the concerns that he had. You know, he was very much against any kind of dancing, alcohol use or smoking or even card playing. And there was a lot of card playing going on around the place. I mean, I knew that, but I just wasn't involved.
Okay, that's a big thing then, if you lived off campus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anxious to hear what some of the other... Audrey keeps saying that people have heated opinions either way. I also interviewed Professor McGinnis, biology department, and he seems to me that he's sort of at the same level as you are, where you were there and you were, of course, indirectly affected, but personally, seems like you don't have adamant feelings really either way? Or am I jumping to conclusions?
Well, you
too
know,
fast?
I just knew that he was a man to be feared. I mean,
okay.
He was somebody that I heard all kinds of stories of handing out very severe discipline to people who missed chapel, who were purported to be drinking off campus at a party. And some of the people that I played basketball with were severely reprimanded. I mean, first offense, you were restricted from intercollegiate sports, for example.
Really?
Yes. He ruled with, I think building for character was his, and the kind of a character in the biblical Christian sense of character was his highest priority for people that came to PLU.
Yeah. Wow, so even drinking off campus was not...
Oh, yeah.
Can he do that?
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, in those days, you could do that. If there was a party and somebody passed the word on and these people learned of it and you got names of people, they were called into the office. And yes, he could, and he did. Reprimand and restrict campus.
Yeah. I can't, you know, if something like that would happen now, if, wow, that's, you know.
Well,
that's
but
just,
those were the days when,
right.
when a freshman student, female living on campus, had to be on 9:15 mm-hmm. during the week. And then midnight on weekends, and you got one late leave till 1 per month.
And
think of that restriction.
Right. And this is what's interesting to me about the whole thing is it's hard for me to sort of put it into context as that, you know, what was in, what was specific to Eastfold and what was specific of just the context of the times, you know, what was going on, because there was there were always gender biases back then and
much more so.
Yeah, so it's hard to know.
Well, I think PLU was generally a more restrictive place than a lot of institutions that we still compete with for students, like Lewis and Clark and Whitman and UPS, and Whitworth probably was similar, and Linfield was similar, but most of the other schools were not as close to a church or didn't have a strong leadership as far as being concerned about Christian faith and so
forth. Are they religiously affiliated?
Very loosely.
Okay.
Like UPS had a Methodist connection, and but it's a very loose
connection. Okay.
So building character, you know, you read it in probably Educating for Service, and I thought of it before I even kind of reviewed that. I remember the build for character song during Eastfold's years. I mean, that was there, and UPS would come over and steal the sign, and we'd go over and burn PLC in there. On their lawn, and we get the sign back. You know, it was a very intense, I think much more intense rivalry between UPS and PLU and CPS and PLC in those days.
Yeah.
Especially among people that lived on campus. I mean, there was nothing else to do. Eastfold's social life for students was the lowest priority. It was the very lowest priority, you know, built for character. And then the academic program, I'm sure, had kind of middle ground importance. But social life was almost non-existent.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll tell you about one incident regarding social life that I don't think is in Phil's book. And that was, we used to have some pretty good entertainment come to PLU. And I think it was my senior year, 1950. It was either 58 or 59 when the four freshmen came and sang a concert. And they were pretty racy for a PLU campus. I mean, some of the jokes they told in between, the style of music, and the four freshmen were extremely popular. And the students loved the performance. But in chapel, the following week, he made the comment, "We will never have that kind of entertainment here again. We witnessed the devil on campus."
Whoa. Okay.
That's how conservative he was. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay.
So he didn't like really non-religious music, dancing, any of those.
You know what I keep thinking of when I think of the dancing thing is the movie Footloose. Have you seen it?
Yes. Yeah.
It's an 80s movie.
Yeah.
You know, my generation. Mm-hmm. I feel so old now that people, kids around me don't remember anything from the 80s. But anyway, yeah, and how the preacher didn't like dancing, and then Kevin Bacon comes up and points it out in the Bible and says the God says let them dance. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm just rambling, but it keeps reminding me of that, because I would have, do you remember sort of student responses? Like, was there ever big student, not riots, but I would think that, you know, someone like Kevin Bacon in Footloose would come up and think of some sort of way to connect with him on a Christian, spiritual level. Or
well, I think there was a real kind of confrontation between some of the student body officers, the presidents, many of whom were preachers' kids, who, you know, thought that things were too conservative and too stale. And, yeah, there were some confrontations. I don't really, in fact, Herb Sievertson was a student body president.
Yeah.
In 56, I think.
Yeah, one of them.
Or 55, 56. One of my close friends is Paul Steen, who graduated from Peoria in 54, and whose father was the pastor at Trinity Lutheran. And all of those Steen kids came through PLU, and Paul reminds me of some incidents, but I mean, they're very vague in my mind. Mm-hmm. There were confrontations, and people look for ways, I think, to almost get into the craw of peaceful.
Yeah, to rationalize.
Yeah.
But to no avail, huh?
To no avail, because he was revered as somebody who was the savior of the university.
Of PLU.
And you talked to, I talked to some of the people at homecoming this weekend, because it reminded me of East Fold, and a lot of people I spent time with this weekend, like, for example, the 47 football team had their 50th reunion, and I went to their special banquet on Saturday night, and East Fold's name came up a few times. We had really some good athletic teams. And he wasn't against athletes or athletics, but he didn't give any special favor. In fact, if anything, he wanted the athletes to be more towing the line than the regular students.
Right. I like that.
But he was he had his style of leadership that we knew that he was king. He was the monarchy of PLU, and that there wasn't any committee structure to speak of. He made the decisions. You know, he was the president, he was the business manager, he was the chief development officer, and he went out and raised money, and he did nickels and dimes, but he always got something.
Yeah.
Seldom got notes when we were raising money. And we should maybe be more aggressive in this style, but it wouldn't work in this day and age anyway.
Well, I read in Phil's book that a lot of the major fundraising he did was through congregations and through churches, and that also during that time, a lot of the Tacoma organizations started not backing PLU.
Yeah, because they didn't like being having their arms twisted.
Yeah.
That he'd go to them and say, okay, we're going to pay the bill, but would you give something back?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So he'd ask for a gift.
He shouldn't have to pay you to pay the bill. Yeah.
Another thing I remember, and this may not be in the line of your questioning, but he would speak in chapel quite often.
I was going to get there.
And I was guilty of skipping chapel, because in our day they did take a role. But I kind of enjoyed his sermons. They were enthusiastic. But he always said, no matter what happened during the week, no matter what the tragedy might have been during the week, he'd stand up on Friday. Usually he'd be the chapel speaker on Fridays, and he'd get up there and say, it's been a good week, or it's been a great week. And I used to say, says who? but that was a characteristic in chapel, I remember. And for me, I was a non-Lutheran. I was, my family was a member of the local Parkland Methodist. But going to chapel was, for me, a good experience.
Was
I would
it?
Not have gone as much as I did without it being required.
So, a good experience in the mean, as far as more than just entertaining.
Yes.
Like you literally got, you got something out of the services.
Yes.
Spiritually.
And the other things about chapel, and I know this is kind of off the subject, is that there were lots of faculty that spoke at chapel that I never had classes from that I remember, like Jesse Pleader.
was a wonderful preacher and orator who I never had a class from, but I witnessed his wonderful sermonettes, homilies during chapel.
Yeah, I think chapel is a wonderful thing. I was in the chapel choir my freshman year. I'm a fifth year senior now.
Okay.
And I really did just enjoy it. I think it's quite, I wouldn't say it's underrated, but it's not, people don't know how good it can be, I think.
How good it can be, how good it can make you feel.
Yeah.
To take a break. And I, you know, on days like today, I should have gone to chapel. There are times when I just need to get myself out of this office and away from my responsibilities and do that.
I was just like, wow. I'm just working on getting back to church. This could be a good segue. Well, great. I was going to ask about the chapel. And did Phil say in his book? Yeah, he said in his book how people would go there and some people would, you know, paint their nails, or some people would write papers and sleep and study.
But you can still pick up some of it even if you're not paying close attention.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty much we've covered a lot of this, because a lot of it had to do with campus life and if anything you ever wanted to do came into direct conflict, you know, with the school.
Well,
but,
not having lived on campus, I didn't have as many of those confrontations.
Right.
I just remember that you were somebody you feared. You were almost coward walking down the hallway.
That's what it...
Most of us that were students during his era will look back and have a great deal of respect for
That's
what he did.
That's what it sounds like.
You know, he roused people to action. He was a tireless worker, and even though a lot of colleges had success during the post-war period, mm-hmm. I still think he did a lot of things the right way.
For that time.
I think people would, I think a vast majority would say that he was the right person for the job, just as I say today that Lauren Anderson is the right person for the job at PLU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the best person, not the right person, but the best person for the job. And I've experienced, along with Eastfold, I've worked for 4 or 5 presidents during my tenure at PLU. I went through work at Wakeman, a 1-year interim presidency with the provost, Jim Coombs,
mm-hmm.
and then a repeat, and now Lauren Anderson.
That's something Professor McGinnis said was, he brought up that there were some problems with not more Beth Thorne right after Wigman. You know, and I just think, yeah, that, you know, there's going to be problems. It's politics with whoever. So that's what I'm, for myself, that's what I'm trying to separate now is, you know, what's separate to Eastfold and what's not. If you had to say what you, in your opinion, what his greatest contribution was to PLU, what would you say?
Well, I think he was probably one of the most vigorous and articulate champions for the cause of PLU that we've had in the history of the 108-year history of the university. His reasons for doing it may not have been proper, or his priorities might have been messed up a little bit, but I just think he was one of the greatest and most tireless workers for the university and for its mission.
Yeah.
And many tenets of that mission are still in existence today. It's part of the heritage of the place, the tradition of the place.
Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing.
Not painting a saint, a curate, a girl, or a saint, but...
Well, you can't discredit, you know, that sort of change and that sort of determination.
That's right.
But it sounds like he had.
It was a good atmosphere at PLC in those days, as I, you know, my dear memory reminds me of those times. You know, it was the past of '50s and the Korean War had settled down, and you know, we were at peace and it was prosperity. Things were going really well. And so for me, it was a good experience. Good morning, Jim Bambi. Hey, it's getting close. Well, drink a cup of coffee. Good, good. That's fine.
Okay, from reading in Phil's book, it seems like his resignation period caused a lot of controversy. Do you remember some of that, or how you felt at the time when
that's the period of time that I left in '60 and I taught in the local school district until '63, and so I was busy as a newlywed with small children, and I just know that there was a real schism among faculty, and some of the faculty that were pro-Eastfold didn't stay at PLU after he left. And some that were the leaders in supporting Eastfold that did stay, there just weren't many that stayed.
Wow.
A lot of them ended up going, for example, to Cal Lutheran
in
1960,
where he went,
yes. So there was an exodus of some of our top faculty. And I just remember that because when I came back to work, some of those people were gone. And, so there were some battle lines going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very controversial. And it's sort of like Wigman had not been here long enough to build that kind of support. But there were some regents who really supported Jane Wigman when the faculty gave a vote of no confidence and he resigned. And those regents have never supported PLU the way they could.
Okay.
Alumni and regents. So anytime you have that kind of a controversy, it happened with Morfitt's era too. I mean, he got to the point where his hearing was bad, he didn't listen very well, he tried to rule in the late 60s and early 70s with that kind of iron-handed way, and it didn't work.
Yeah, especially.
Yeah. In faculty meetings, he wasn't listening, couldn't hear, and he wasn't listening, and he'd go ahead and make decisions at the faculty meeting. So being a college president was a very difficult job, and not many are in the future will ever have a 19-year tenure like Eastfold did. I mean, Bill Reedy did an outstanding job in the school. 17 years as president.
This is Anderson's fifth year? Yeah, because he started when I was a freshman.
His fifth year senior.
Yeah, just like me.
Yeah, and he kind of connects with PLU that way. Well, it's my sophomore year. No, it's my senior. It's my fifth year.
That's cute.
Yeah.
He's from North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
which is where I graduated high school.
Oh, really?
So he took me to the airport once. Yeah. I remember I was cool freshman year going, yeah, well, the president's going to take me to the airport.
Is that Fargo?
Bismarck. Was where I lived.
Okay, I was born in Jamestown, or in Linton.
Oh, really?
South of Bismarck.
Yeah.
Emmons County. But my dad took the family and headed west when I was very, very young, so I kind of a native Washington.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I think that's all I have.
Well, I wish my memory for those kinds of things, I can remember more the good times I had playing basketball.
Oh, of
any
course.
Any bad times I had with Eastfold. And for me, as I mentioned before, it was a good experience, and I respected him, but it's too bad you had to fear somebody like that. I don't think many students fear Lauren Anderson.
Right.
I mean, he walks into the dorm, and I think they welcome him and enjoy his company. Eastfold wasn't someone you sat down and just had a regular conversation with. Lauren and I had driven 2 hours from Denver to Colorado Springs, and of course we've known each other for about 30 years, but he's pretty much the same person, in a very
casual, relaxed conversation as it would be
running the school.
Running the institution.
I would think a lot of that has to do with the times as well.
Sure.
I mean, communication is so revered now, and openness and all that. I really can't tell you how much I appreciate you putting thought into this before I came. That's wonderful.
I hope it's helpful to you.
It's very helpful. It's very helpful.
And good luck to you. And